Altered Carbon is over, but we're just getting started talking about it here on Post Show Recaps. Hello, everybody. I'm Antonio Mazzaro wearing Josh Wigler's sleeve, joined by Josh Wigler and Antonio Mazzaro's sleeve. Antonio, that's me. Josh, how are you?
I'm very confused. I don't know what else to say. Yeah. I'm very confused. Yeah. And that doesn't just apply to what you just said, Josh Tonio, yeah. But I'm very confused by some of the things in Altered Carbon. But I watched it. I'm ready to talk about it.
All right, let's quickly exchange stacks so we can get back into the right sleeves and make this. No one is going to buy it if I'm the one with this voice saying all of the intelligent things and you're making all of like the fart jokes. So let's just quickly re-sleeve. And okay, I'm Josh again. Antonio, how are you doing today?
Much less confused, feeling good. My craving for pizza is it's just gone. I had a really strong pizza craving.
Isn't it really powerful? Like, do you feel like you understand me a little bit more?
This is interesting. I didn't know it was like body based. I thought it would have been brain based or stack based, but I guess not.
I think it really actually is just as an aside body based because we don't need to get into the full story, but it's like my birth story, my origin story definitely does involve some pizza. Ask me about it sometime. I'll tell you, but let's talk about Altered.
The story of your birth involves pizza.
Yes,
you're just going to yada yada that.
Have I never talked to you about that before?
I don't believe so.
I was a week late, and Dee Dee, my lovely mother.
If you're a week late, the baby's free, I heard.
My lovely mother was eating pizza with my grandmother, and about an hour later, I wanted out and started choking myself and had to be removed from my mother. So pizza is an integral part of my origin story. I feel like I must have said that to somebody somewhere along the way.
Were Josh still in this stack, he would say, oftentimes when you eat pizza, something wants out an hour later.
That's true.
But Antonio would never say
a joke like that.
No,
he wouldn't.
So
no,
it's a good
wouldn't.
Thing we switch back.
All right. So we're talking about Altered Carbon. If you are super confused about everything that we are saying right now, that is because, join us. We are also confused. This is a show that takes place in a far future, about like 300 or so years into the future, maybe 400 years into the future, where humanity has basically conquered death. To some degree, at least, or death is less of an issue than it has been in the past. People are able to basically download their consciousnesses and their souls to something that is called a cortical stack, which is implanted into the back of your spine and codes your spirit and your soul and your personality and everything. And that stack can be implanted into another human body following the death of your own human body, or even not necessarily the death of your human body. Your human body can go on ice, and these human bodies are called sleeves, and people re-sleeve all the time. This is just the way that it is in the future, and an entire show exists based on that premise, and it's on Netflix right now, and it's 10 episodes, and it's called Altered Carbon. Does that make sense? Where are we right now, Antonio?
That sounds good to me. I mean, that's what it is. The technology was not invented for that purpose, but that the technology is now used for that purpose in the context of Altered Carbon. And you can imagine it's certainly a story where you've changed. I wouldn't call it magical realism because so much of the world is different, but some element of society changed. And what we're seeing is far into the future when that element changing in society has an impact on all sorts of systems, and whether that's a caste system or a system of government or a system of the police force or just any sort of punishment or anything you can think of that involves humans is reflected with or reflects this new change. And that's ultimately what the larger world of Altered Carbon is about. What would a world be like where that ability was possessed, and how would that impact from the way it would affect murder victims to the way that it would affect criminals? The world is very different, and that is the world we enter into, and we tell a murder mystery in the course of that, in the context of that world. And I think that's what Altered Carbon nominally is, at least, right, Josh? A murder mystery in that world.
Yes, that is certainly the case. We have our main character, Takeshi Kovacs, is on the case. He is played mostly by Joel Kinnaman, not entirely by Joel Kinnaman. again because of the concept of the show, where the human body is a fleeting concept. There are at least, I think we were talking before we got on here, four different people that are playing Takeshi Kovacs at any given time, but Joel Kinnaman is the main person. And the show's initial premise, you know, very early on in the show, it is revealed that this is a man who has been on ice for hundreds of years. Takeshi Kovacs is sort of this legendary soldier who has been on ice for a very long time, and he is supposed to not ever be woken up again, but he is woken up again, and it is because he has the special skills required to bust a case, a murder mystery. Someone hires Takeshi Kovacs to solve a murder. My murder. It's Lawrence Bancroft is the name of the guy. He's played by James Purefoy of Rome fame, also of The Following, many other shows.
Was he Hap or Leonard?
He was Gil Hap, I believe, and Leonard. And so he hires Takeshi Kovacs to solve his own murder, again, because death is a fleeting concept. He is still alive, but he was killed at least briefly. And that's really where the story, it all spins out from there. So it's very much of the kind of like neo-noir, very Blade Runner-esque. This is based on a novel by Richard K. Morgan, who has volunteered that Blade Runner was a big influence on his story. You can certainly tell just based on the visual world of Altered Carbon that it is very Blade Runner-esque. And then it's crazy. Crazy stuff happens from there. It's very violent. It's very sexual. It is dark at points. Sometimes it's pretty funny. It is wildly confusing for much of it. It is all available to you on Netflix. We were requested when we announced that we were doing this podcast to kind of talk about it a little bit spoiler-free before we start talking about it in a really spoiler-filled way, which we will do in a few minutes. We're still in that spoiler-free area. But while we are in this area, Antonio, would you recommend Altered Carbon to people? Like, what's your hot take on Altered Carbon as a show, having watched the full 10 episodes?
If anything that we just said sounds interesting to you, you should check it out, but you should do that with the knowledge that it is an exceedingly violent show. It is a disturbingly violent show. There are images that are violent of a sexual nature that are disturbing. I find that for some people, the action scenes and the violence of the show will be a hook, and I get that. It reminded me, in a way, of the show Into the Badlands, if you're a fan of that show, in terms of the action scenes, or the, you're talking 300 years in the future, for example, but people are still using swords, even though there are guns, and there are some incredible scenes in this show involving swordplay. So if that sort of thing is a hook for you, this show is going to give it in spades. If the sci-fi story or the angle of the sci-fi aspect of the show is a hook for you, you have to be willing to accept and stomach that level of violence. And I think for some people, that's just going to be a barrier for this show. It is, you have to keep in mind that you're talking about a world where death has ceased to exist, as Joshi was saying. But what that means is that people treat their sleeves, their bodies, with a little bit of abandon, especially the people who are able to do that. And by that, I mean the people who are rich or the people who may have cloned themselves or who have multiple copies of the same sleeve they can just re-download into, or who have even backed up their consciousness away from their brains. Because of course, one of the ways that you can have a real death in this show is you blow out the stack. You absolutely shoot through the chip that's in the brain or that's in the spine, as you were pointing out, that could completely erase you if you don't have a backup copy. And who has the backup copy? Well, the very rich, the people who have the ability to pay for prolonged services, have the best everything. They have the best sleeves. They have the best treatment. They have the best ability to survive and be immortal, ultimately godlike in a way. So because of that, there is just a lot of violence in this show, and there's no getting past that. So even though
you're not like, this is not your thing, like you're not like a huge, huge violence guy when it comes to your entertainment. So I was very curious how you would respond to the show.
Yeah, a lot of times I just didn't watch that closely when it was a fight for fight's sake, even though I knew it was cool and I'm sure it was well choreographed. And there were times, and we'll talk about them in the spoiler area, where I was like, okay, this is good violence. Like, this is a good action scene. What we just saw here, I found to be like awesome or really, really great. But there were times where I was like, wow, this is like all-time TV OTT level of violence.
Well, there's like a thing where, like, structurally, just like to spoil kind of structurally how the episodes play out, I feel like there is like the obligatory action scene in every single episode.
Yeah, because I realize
some of them are better than others, but others are just like, okay, I guess it's time for the Altered Carbon action scene.
Yeah, and I think that, like I said, I do think that the action is a hook for the show in much the same way that the action is a hook for something like The Punisher or some of the other Netflix series that have high levels of violence like Daredevil. The violence or the action is a hook for that show. You're not watching that show thinking, boy, I really hope there aren't any action scenes here. Like, you're in part watching it because you expect to see really cool and impressively staged action scenes. And there's plenty of those in Altered Carbon, but there are also plenty of times where I felt like, okay, this is a little OTT with blood or with violence of some sort. So that I would just say, if you know that that's not a thing that you're into, even if you're super into sci-fi or the idea of something being called like a cyberpunk Blade Runner or the comparisons that this show invokes sound interesting to you, just keep in mind, like, the violence is there, and it is certainly a big hook for this show. I'm sure it was part of the book that it's based on. I'm sure that they didn't invent everything whole cloth. Like I said, it's a fundamental part of the world that people are just going to be more reckless with their bodies because they can be re-sleeved or because there are things that can be done. People are less afraid of death in certain ways. So there are multiple staging elements of actual, like, gladiatorial combat fights, like where people are fighting to the death over and over again for sport or for entertainment, taking the WWE to an all-time new level, that sort of interesting action staging. And so it's part of the story, whether you like it or not. But if you don't like that sort of thing, even if you like the sci-fi, this might not be the show for you.
So was it the show for you? Was it too much? Did it take you out of it?
No, it didn't. It didn't ultimately take me out of it. I think what it made me do was take the show a little less seriously than I think the show probably would have wanted me to at times, and maybe less seriously than the concept and the good things about the show deserved, because there's a lot of interesting stuff going on here. There are a lot of interesting things that the show does, I think, really well with in terms of the ideas of re-sleeving. People putting on sleeves that are totally different than their personality for fun, or people being forced into sleeves for one reason or another, oftentimes because of government bureaucracy that they don't want. The religious elements of, should we even be doing this? And the idea of all that, they get a lot out of the concept. Once this is invented, you really get a lot out of, okay, so what happens after that? And so I appreciated watching all of that play out. The murder mystery fell a little by the wayside for me, and we can talk about that as we get into the spoilers. That was a great hook, but it was gone by the middle of the series, and I think the series lost some steam as a result of that. I think it's still satisfyingly presented, but throughout the course of the series, it didn't keep me pulled in. But yeah, I watched it all very relatively quickly in a matter of
it's a fast watch.
Days. Yeah,
you know, it's 10 episodes, and I think it goes pretty quickly. I think it's looking at the stats on Wikipedia, which is of course always reliable, it is 46 minutes at its shortest episode and 66 minutes at its longest, and I think it tends to air closer to like the 50 minute mark. So it's a pretty fast show to watch. It's really engaging. It is really action packed, so it's always kind of frenetic and feels fast. I do think that it suffers from a common problem with not just Netflix shows but streaming shows, of just being a little bloated, being a little overly long. I think that this could have been 8 episodes even, and I think it would have been a tighter, better story. I think that you could probably lose about 2 episodes worth of story material here, and you would have a better story. I think overall, I would give it a thumbs up. Like, I think that overall, the themes that it is playing with, and a lot of what you've touched on in terms of like cross-sleeving or double-sleeving or being forced into sleeves that are not a fit for you, just like kind of identity issues, I think it's all really compelling material to chew on. And if you're able to kind of get through some of the popcorny aspects of the show, I think that there's a lot of real mental food for you. I think that like it's a really heady show when it's at its best, and it's filled with some really great performances, some really great acting, some excellent characters. Just early shout out to Poe, Chris Connor as Poe.
Oh, we're doing the Poe show recap right now, right?
Yeah, this is a Poe show recap for sure. He is a fantastic character. He's like an artificial intelligence proprietor
great.
Of a hotel, and he's just fantastic. So the world is really cool and instantly realized. But it's also just insane. And some of the things are like very insanely cool. And then other times just like insanely bizarre. So it's kind of a mixed bag. It is a big blockbuster of a show. It is expensive. And no it doubt. Really, it looks expensive. It looks massively expensive. And there are reports that this is like the most expensive first season of television ever produced. The, you know, Netflix is being very coy about the exact number of the budget that was on this first season, but it really does show like this is the type of thing that you would expect to see in like a Wachowski sibling film. You know, there's a lot of Matrix overtones to this, you know, just anyway, but it feels like something that you would see in the theaters rather than at home. So I think that on that level, on a visual level, and in terms of putting your money where your mouth is for TV, this feels like a major moment for television. So on that level, I think that it's a pretty cool show. It's worth checking out if you're interested in just sort of the evolution of how TV is being presented right now.
I agree with everything you said. One thing we didn't mention, though, and this is borne out if you go to IMDb, the plot keywords that are listed in order from top to bottom here, starting male frontal nudity, male full frontal nudity, female full frontal yes. nudity, set in future, doppelganger, and then there are more. There pulls no punches. We talked about the violence. It's also, there's a lot of nudity, and sex is a major presentation in the story. It's a major part of it, and I don't want to spoil the actual story, but it plays a part in the narrative of the show, obviously. But as I said, we only bring these things up, and we're not talking from a spoiler context, to say that these are things that are present in the show. There's a lot of violence. There is a lot of sexuality. There is a fair amount of nudity. If those are things that you find to be barriers, this is not the show for you. That said, on the same IMDb page, there's a 10-star review from someone named Alex Cam. And Alex Cam says, "I was spellbound from the first minute." Well, actually, Alex said, "from the first minute." "I watched all 10 episodes in a row, and oh, I was overwhelmed with emotion, happiness, tears. I haven't shed a tear for televised entertainment since I saw The Little Mermaid when I was 6. These are very different shows, I should say.
Yes.
And Alex, so Alex loved it. There are people that are going to absolutely love 100%. Everything about this show. And those, I'm not saying those people are wrong. I'm saying for me, or for you, or for anyone, if the hardcore action or violence, or the hardcore sex and nudity is not your flavor, this is not the show for you.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, well, let's move into spoiler filled territory so we can talk about the whole show from that perspective, from everything that happens in these first 10 episodes. I think this will be a little bit of a free-for-all in terms of the conversation. We're just talking, Antonio. It's been a little while since you and I got on the mics together. It's been a while. We had that great Good Place podcast with Mike Bloom. That was super fun to do. But other than that, this is our first podcast since Mr. Robot went off the air in December. So just a pleasure to be on the horn with you again, Antonio.
It is. I really just watched this show so that we could talk about it. That's really all that it is. There's a million shows I could have watched. I'm being honest.
I think that's definitely true. I had to watch it for work. All right. So yeah. we are now officially in spoiler filled territory. Hopefully that was enough of a filibuster to get you out of here if you had to scramble for your phone. Where do you want to start? What do you want to chew on first?
I want to start with the life choices that I make where your job determines what TV shows I watch. Altered Carbon.
You're a very good friend.
Altered Carbon. It's a book, right? It was a book. Can you imagine this being a book? Like, how would this? I have not read it, but like,
I have it right next to me. I have it in my hand. I haven't started reading it yet, but I'm curious to do it.
The action scenes in this show are just so, like, so off the chain, unbelievable. A husband and wife killing each other every night in different sleeves for entertainment, gladiatorial combat, you know, people showing up out of the nowhere and just using a katana or whatever kind of sword that was to just kill everyone in sight. A hotel that shoots people. I cannot imagine what the violence in that book is written like, or I wonder if it was played up for the show, but I don't think it was.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, I could certainly imagine the world that is described in the book being as vivid as what we see on television. Like, that's the thing that really kind of took me aback in terms of what this show looks like. I mean, the budget that must have been, you know, put together in order to put this show together. must have been enormous, because it's the kind of thing that you read about in prose. Like, you read about this in a novel because a novel is not constrained by that kind of budget. Like, that's the thing that George R. R. Martin has always talked about in terms of Game of Thrones, that he has written these lavish locations, and, you know, the way that he describes the Iron Throne in the books in A Song of Ice and Fire is so much more unimaginably epic than, you know, HBO could ever even bring to life. And so what we're seeing here in Altered Carbon, without having read the book, like, it feels like this must be a really faithful adaptation of the world that is described by Richard K. Morgan in his book. But I can't tell you that with any kind of authority, because I haven't dug into the book yet, but I'm curious to. That was one of the things that I did take away from this show, was even though I thought that the story was a little bit wonky, especially now we're getting to hardcore spoiler mode, like the return of Raylene and her being like, you know, the secret bad guy and everything like that. It was like kind of like, all right.
That's certainly a sideways journey that turns into the journey. That's questionable, but
right.
It you're right. The book, who knows, right? Like, who knows where that gets into it. Like, it makes you interested to read it for sure, because you're right. I don't know what they could possibly have conceived on the page that was more grandiose than what was on the screen, but you have a feeling that it was. Just your Game of Thrones example is perfect. Even though the Eerie is crazy on the show, and Tyrion's looking over the edge, and you see the moon door and all of that, the actual way to get to the Eerie in the books is so much more complex and complicated than what we see on the show, and it makes the Eerie seem even more impenetrable, and they don't go there on the show. So you wonder, like, in these moments where we're in virtual on Altered Carbon, or when they are doing like zero G fighting or suspended gravity or whatever is going on, wherever any of these things are happening, or I don't know, like when a woman maybe is killing like dozens of naked clones of another woman, like with shattered glass everywhere. What does that look like on the page? It's definitely very curious, for sure.
So let's start there, I think, because we have been talking about the action. We've been talking about the sexuality of the show. And those two things really come to a head together in that action scene you're talking about, where Kristen Ortega encounters Raylene for the first time, and she encounters a whole lot of Raylene in many ways. Was this one of the action scenes that was too much for you, or was this one where, like, oh, this is really interestingly done?
I was a little too much. Yeah. The nudity didn't move the needle for me one way or the other in that scene. I actually should say, like, major props to them for not really, for that being, that was part of the scene, but it wasn't presented as like a key element of the scene. It was just clones emerging. And so that's how the clones were emerging.
Like, it had that really creepy quality of just like, she would kill one of the Raylenes, and then like the next Raylene would like smash her hands against the glass and then come out. It really, I don't know if you've ever read this comic book Girls by the Luna Brothers. It was an Image Comics series.
No, I have not. I've heard of this book, though.
It reminded me a lot of that. I won't spoil it any further. You guys should check out that comic if you're interested in a good comic. Yeah, but just like kind of that like creepy quality of just like something alien about this scene with Raylene.
Right. And so props to them for presenting it that way. I think the violence that really bothered me was more of the, and it wasn't always presented in the moment, but also the aftermath, more of the sexualized violence. That was really disturbing. And I know that that was part of the story, and that's a key element of what was going on, and that influences the mystery, but it also influences the motivations, and it's a plot point in terms of why certain things were done or why certain characters' deaths happened the way they did. It still was too disturbing for me. I thought, you know what, there are ways to present that were a little less disturbing than what was presented here. And I feel like in this show, where some of the audience is going to feel maybe like James Purfoy, like they're going to enjoy that aspect of it. And that I couldn't watch it and not think, like, there are sickos out there that are going to like this. And you shouldn't be putting this on a platter for them. And so that bothered me. And there were a couple other times where I felt like, okay, I get it. Like, you're killing people. Like, you know, you're going to survive. There's violence here. But other than that, there was cool violence. I mean, I thought the... some of the weapons were cool. I thought what happened ultimately with Ortega's shoulder and that tool that she later uses, I thought that was a really cool tool that was ripping out like star-shaped portions of flesh. I thought that was really interesting. Some of the fights and the violence was really cool. I thought when Rey first showed up, it was one of the coolest scenes on the whole series. When she shows up looking like a character from Mortal Kombat before you ever know who she really is, yeah. It just wipes everyone out in that fighting arena. I thought that was really cool.
Well, I think that that's, you know, something that I think is worth talking about, because we do have like the hook of the story is it's a murder mystery and you're looking at everybody as a possible suspect. And, you know, the person who ultimately is responsible for, you know, or at least is at least the kind of the engineer of Bancroft's death ends up being somebody who is incredibly close to Kovach. And it's his sister who he has thought was dead for so many years, but she first shows up kind of in like a heroic capacity, and then we get into what I thought was a really great episode. Maybe my favorite of the series was episode 7, when we do that big flashback to Harlan's world, not Harlan County, and we get to see everything that was going on with Kovach becoming one of the envoys and reuniting with his sister. And by the end of that, she is revealed to be the bad guy. And I think it's really from there, once we have Raylene as the active villain of the series, that the show starts to lose me a little bit. Is that around the point where it was losing you, or do you have a different reaction to that stuff?
It's hard to say, because I was pretty bought in on the murder mystery element. I'm a film noir guy. I love Blade Runner. Like the idea that you've got a mystery in this world was interesting to me. And I thought you could tell the story. There were several mysteries really that were playing out. You were playing out at first, like, why are all these people after Kovach? Like who is Riker? Like why is this a thing that's happening? And you learn the truth of that mystery in the first few episodes, right? The first maybe 4 episodes. But there was also the overarching mystery that Bancroft brings him back to life for this strict purpose. And it's presented as a locked room mystery in many ways, like a classic. There's no way anyone could have done this, and you had to have done it yourself. And how all that played out was fascinating to me initially. But then what you do ultimately is you have it, quote unquote, be solved maybe 5 episodes in, when Isaac, the son of Lawrence Bancroft, is revealed to be keeping a clone of Lawrence Bancroft. Illegally.
And what is Isaac's the name of the actor who plays Isaac Bancroft, Antonio?
You tell me. It's Antonio Marzali. Yeah, it's
his name is literally Antonio Marzali.
Yeah, 1Z1R. So yes. For those of you keeping track at home, 1Z1R there. But this is Isaac Bancroft. He's the guy. He's going to do it. And then no, that wasn't the case. So it was a little weird the way that mystery went off the rails, because what you had was, okay, here's a mystery. Here are the potential people that could have done it. And then you go through about 6 episodes of that, and you're working out the mystery in your head. Maybe it was her. What was her motivation? Maybe it was the wife. Maybe it was the son. Maybe it was this person. Maybe it was that person. And then the person who ultimately is responsible is a person who's not involved in the story at all, who comes into the story, as you point out, in the sixth, at the end of the 6th episode, and who becomes the focus of the second half of the season, 7, 8, 9, 10, but is not ultimately in the story other than that. It just doesn't feel conjoined. It feels a little disjointed. You work through 6 episodes trying to solve a murder mystery with the players that you think are in play. It's like you're playing Clue with Professor Plum and Miss Scarlet, Mr. Green, and all of a sudden a new character like Mr. Turquoise comes into play. And you're like, well, I didn't even know I could accuse Mr. Turquoise. Oh, I just screwed up and my whole game is over because I didn't think about Mr. Turquoise from the jump. But in this particular story, it's Mr. Turquoise in a very indirect way with the ultimately very intricately staged plot in the sex warehouse that is responsible for the crime. So it's really weird how that story plays out. And I think the problem is that for me, the fact that it was six episodes of solving the murder mystery, and then it turns into a solution that wasn't even part of those six episodes. Now, granted, the character Ray was a part of those six episodes. I don't want to say that she wasn't in the story at all, but it's such a left field solution to the murder mystery that it does feel like it's not really joined very well together. And it does feel like two very separate things. That said, it is ultimately, I didn't feel like it was a stretch to think that the crime came off the way it did. I felt like it played out the way that I was like, okay, I find that, you know, that's a plausible story. But I was not satisfied with the overall narrative keeping together. It goes very sideways. And you're right, seven is probably one of the best episodes, but it's so sideways from the narrative that it does feel from, like, say, a forward motion standpoint, it does feel like it got derailed.
Yeah, I don't know. I love Deachin Lockman. I think that she's terrific and has been really great in a lot of different roles. I don't know if you were a Dollhouse guy at all, Antonio.
I watched it. My mom loves that show.
Yeah, I think that the second season of that show is one of my favorite seasons of anything. So I was really hooked into the second season, especially of that show. Only two seasons. Very easy watch if anybody's bored and looking for something to do. And she's really, really good on that. So I was excited to see her have like such a vital role in this show. I do think that like she has played this type of character before, like this sort of like 11th hour villain, like not to spoil it on some of the other things that she's been involved in, but I do think that that's kind of a thing for her. So when it happened on this show, I was kind of like, I would have liked it if like now suddenly like Kovach had like his sister back and had like another partner in crime in the mystery. But now I'm just complaining about, you know, the show not living up to my own fanfic. So that's not exactly fair. But I really liked her performance. I really did enjoy her performance. I didn't love that twist. Also, like on top of that, like she has gotten really, really, really bad in the intervening years. Yes. And I guess, like, you know, I mean, she kills Kelchrist in you know that moment. She kills all of the envoys. So even back then, she has this really dark side of her. But in the centuries following her betrayal of her brother, she, you know, she comes up with head in the clouds. Like she's the proprietor of that place. And that is like the most messed up place that we see in the entire show. The, you know, the basically the brothel where you kill the employees. And that's how you get your kicks. And it's for like very high powered clientele.
That's only
and,
a
like,
small part of what she does, Josh.
That's just a little bit. Yeah. So like, what else is she involved in? So I don't know, like once that shift happened, I was kind of like, all right, like that's where, when I said before that I feel like this could have gone down from 10 to 8. Like, I think that's where, like, you start to, that's where some of the wheel spinning starts to happen for me, like 8, 9, and 10, those episodes. I think, like, if you had taken two out of that and, like, you had the reveal of Ray as the villain with maybe one episode left to go, I feel like you just have a tighter season. I don't know.
Well, and you can tell, and I focused on this in the non-spoiler section or the spoiler-free section, but you can tell they're adapting a work and that it's not a work that they're adapting the entire part of, right? Like aren't there multiple things in play here and that this is, the source material does not end with one book. Is that right?
Yeah, I think I think that's correct.
Yeah, I believe that. So I believe ultimately what you're doing here is, I mean, there's a lot set up, I think, at the end of the day that you can play off ultimately where this goes. I know, I thought there were a couple sequels. Maybe it's a trilogy. Maybe it's planned for more.
So there's three books. There's three books from Richard K. Morgan. Altered Carbon is the first. Then I think it's called Broken Angels is the second. And then there's Woken Furies. And my understanding is it changes genres, it changes locations, it changes time periods, and Kovach himself changes sleeves across all three of the books, which is why, of course, one of the reveals in season one of Altered Carbon is that the Joel Kinnaman sleeve is actually a guy named Riker, who was Ortega's partner, both in terms of her job and in terms of her romantic life. And he is set up for a crime that he was, you know, innocent of, and he's put on ice. And then it's just kind of a way to like torture Ortega. Kovach is put inside of the Riker sleeve. And by the end of the season, Riker is going to get his sleeve back and Kovach disappears into the night. You really only see a silhouette of him and you don't know what he looks like anymore. That's because, as it's already been confirmed, Joel Kinnaman is not going to be on the show anymore. And in fact, I think I would expect the vast majority, if not the entire cast, will not appear in a second season, if there is a second season. So whoever's playing Kovach is going to be a completely different actor.
Christopher Plummer, I think. They're going to shoot all the scenes with Christopher Plummer. And that's, no, I'm not, that is not an affront to Joel Kinnaman. Sorry. Yeah, just the House of Cards connection is enough for me. The yeah, I don't know. So that's all by way of me saying, if the next two books are about Kovacs and about Quellcrist Falconer and about Rey, and that's the larger story that's being told here, perhaps it's a little bit of an unfair criticism to level against this particular season of TV, that the Rey shift occurs and that we spend episodes on Rey and Kovacs' relationship at the end of the day, 8, 9, and 10, if that's going to be a key element of the next couple of books. I'm totally unspoiled. I don't know if what happens with Rey is truly the end of Rey, as we see the show presenting that it's possibly the end of Rey.
Which, by the way, I thought that was a really great scene. Like, I thought that, you know, the moment of Takeshi and Rey, like, kind of like, you know, fighting it out, and then like she's clearly lost and he's holding her. Like, I thought that the way that they played that was really great.
Yeah, it was. And what I don't know is how to properly evaluate that in context. Like, is that a really great scene? And I don't need to know if she's going to come back to know if that was good. Like you're pointing out, it was really great how that was put together. But I don't know, ultimately, when you're talking about wheel spinning, if that was time spent that will pay off down the line or not. In the context of this season, though, it does feel like this season could have been shorter. Were they doing heavy lifting for future seasons of TV? It's hard to say. Clearly, for example, everything that happens in episode 7, it does really influence what we know about Takeshi and about the relationship that he has with Rey and how that plays out. But it also really gives you the backstory of Takeshi and Falconer, a character that we've seen Quellcrist Falconer appearing throughout the course of the series as like a force ghost, right? Like, she's giving Takeshi advice, knowing that she's not there. But she's maybe speaking to him and saying, you need to be doing this, or this is a thing. But the possibility exists, surely, as Rey introduces it at the end of the series, that she's actually not dead, that there is a backed up copy of her somewhere, and that it seems like maybe season 2 is going to be Takeshi looking for that backed up copy. That's the way this,
the search for Falconer.
Yes, that's the way the season ends, right? Like, she's in Carbonite somewhere and he's going to go out and find her. There's a poem or a story that's being told about this guy, you know, the person who went to find this thing, or this thing happened. And it's clear that this princess, or this story that was being related, the fable or the parable, is ultimately about what Takeshi's going to do, is probably go look for her and maybe find her across the sands of time. So that's fine. But what that means is the time that they spend on that relationship and that playing out will be good time spent if they do future seasons of the show. And I think similarly, if Rey comes back, all the stuff between Rey and other characters, and certainly Rey and Takeshi in the context of the last couple of episodes, I do think that matters. That said, I feel like the show was doing, like, is an episode, wouldn't you say, like episodes 8 or 9, that's ultimately like a caper episode. It's a double sleeve, and this is my gambit that I'm gonna run, and Poe's gonna hack
nine.
In
it's the
yeah that's 9. That's all, like, Leverage, almost like the TV show Leverage. Like, this is a team of rogues, a rogues gallery, if you will. Like, they're going to put themselves through some whole caper. And that just felt like, okay, this episode belongs to a different show. And I think episode 3 maybe felt like that to me. If that's the Day of the Dead episode, where the hotel is dressing himself up, where Poe is dressing himself up in Day of the Dead stuff, that felt almost lighter than the rest of the series. And it felt like it belonged to a different series. So even in the context of this first season, it felt like they were doing episodes of TV that maybe didn't feel like they directly belonged tonally or presentation wise with the rest of the series. And I think that can sometimes work. I thought a lot about American Gods when I was watching Altered Carbon, because American Gods is another show that does really, really big things, and it can take you from place to place and story to story, and can present things to you that are only occurring for maybe 5 minutes on the show, but that are bonkers, and you're watching them like, what am I watching from a staging standpoint? And I think that Altered Carbon gets there, and feels like different shows at times, but I do think that takes away from the maybe overall element of the show. The most common thing I've seen people say about this show, Josh, is that people watch the whole thing and then they say, I can't tell if it was good or not. You know, like I liked it. I watched it, but I don't know if it was actually good or not. So I feel like that's the most common thing I've heard people say about the show. And I think the lack of cohesiveness on that standpoint is a part of that. It doesn't present an overall propulsive, connected experience. There are these disjointed elements that all come together as part of a larger narrative, which is a fascinating narrative that's going to cover a lot of things, but I think it takes away from the overall experience.
Well, I think it's interesting because I think if this show does get a second season, I think it's going to be tonally very different from the first. First of all, it's going to, you know, look completely different because we're not going to see any of the recognizable faces from the first season. I think if there's going to be any holdovers from season one into future seasons, the three people that I would expect we would see more of are Deechan Lachman as Raylene in flashback form, probably. I think we would see Will-Yun Lee as Kovach Prime, as the original body of Kovach. I think if you're still telling a Kovach story, you can't have it without the original version of the guy. So I think that we would see him. And then I think that we would see Kelchrist, as you said, who may still be alive. So I think those are going to be the only three holdovers as we move into the future of the show. And again, my understanding of the books is that it's changing genres the way that, you know, people change sleeves in the world of Altered Carbon. I think it might even be like a space marine story, I think, is the second book. So it's just I think that that's almost part of, you know, the concept of the world of the show is also almost like the presentation of the show. I think that there is a concerted effort for the show to like kind of re-sleeve with some ease. And I think that that can be jarring as a viewer. And I think that that might speak to what you were talking about in terms of like the feeling a little disconnected from the show, which I felt at times as well. I will say, I think episode three, which you mentioned, I'm pretty sure that's the episode where Kovach goes to the huge lavish party that Bancroft is throwing up in the Aerium. And that's where we get the zero G fight scene, which was just, that was insane. That was a really insane scene.
Yeah, very insane. And I was like, what show am I even watching?
It's like the swingers, like are like kind of swingers, or like this married couple will like they fight each other to the death, and the winner gets like a combat ready sleeve, and the loser gets like a slightly downgraded sleeve. And is it Kovach who says to them like, what do your kids think when you go home looking like different people? They're like, ah, they're used to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Point.
They're part of a carnival circus fighting murder families, so they're fine. They'll be just fine. So,
yeah. In terms of characters that are not going to continue over, like the one that I will mourn the most, of course, is Poe. I thought that Poe was such a great character, the proprietor of the Raven Hotel, played by Chris Connor, obviously inspired by Edgar Allan Poe. Really terrific death scene, I thought, in the final episode, and just an incredible job all around by that guy. I thought that he that was such a fun character to watch.
Yeah, I gotta think that there's a possibility they could bring this guy back.
Yeah, sure.
And I don't
as
know
like
if he would be in the
AI
Poe form
or
not, but there's a I mean, he's a computer, right? I know that the idea was the AI was destroyed and that was the end of that, but I mean, there has to be a backup. Did some corporation own the thing? Who created it? Could you recreate the AI? Like, I feel like there's a possibility that we would see Poe again. I do think that that's likely to have emerged, and I've not seen or read really a ton because I just finished the show a couple days ago. But I got to imagine that's a beloved character that people would want to see again. And I think since it's a computer or an AI, that's an easier one to establish. Especially if there's some loyalty there or some connection with Kovach, there's probably a way to bring that character back into the story. Similar, I think you could bring in Lizzie and you could bring Elliot into the story. Like, there are ways, I think, when you talk about a team, and throughout the first season, of course, Joel Kinnaman as Kovach is saying, I don't care about anyone. Like, I don't feel anything. I don't have any feelings or care about anyone. That's his stock and trade response when people are pointing out that he might be doing that. No, I could never do that. No. And we know it's probably not true. And I think that if you're looking at him putting together a team to do something, the first people he's going to go to are Lizzie and then the Elliot family, and ultimately probably bring Poe into that mix as well.
I think that would be great. I would love that. And I think more than anything, I just think that because he played an AI character, I could imagine the actor Chris Connor playing different AI characters. Like, I could imagine that the show had a good relationship with him and loved what he did and would like to try a different sleeve of sorts with that character. That would be my prediction for how that would work out.
Speaking of different sleeves of sorts, how did you feel about when, I think these are very notable moments in the show, when you've got a character playing in a different sleeve, whether that's an abuela deciding to put on a very aggressive, hostile, criminal looking sleeve, or right. whether that's somebody being re-sleeved, that is a woman being re-sleeved as a man and her husband meeting her after she's
got the first one. Yeah. The first one you ever encounter in the whole show is the poor little girl who's like in the body of an old woman. Yeah, that was really messed up. Our good friend of the podcast, Sir Fitzy Brendan, had reached out to me to be like, that was so messed up. It was just that whole scene. And Brendan had only watched the first episode at that point. I was just like, it gets worse. It gets really
crazy. What's your nightmare re-sleeve scenario?
My nightmare re-sleeve.
Your stack doesn't get blown out, but your sleeve is shot. No RD for JW, but JW has to be re-sleeved. What's the worst case scenario for you?
Nick Majorana.
Oh, man. So many people would say that was best case for them. For you, it's worst. That's fantastic.
No. What would yours be?
Oh, I don't know. Probably like... an enemy, right? Like, that's why you said Nick Majorana, but you probably don't want to take on the face or appearance of someone that you don't want to look at in the mirror every morning. Like, that would be the true nightmare. So I don't know if it's an orange buffoon or someone that you would put on a slab like that, but it just seems like the thing that's interesting about Riker, right, is that he puts a sleeve on and the sleeve is notorious. Like, people immediately recognize him. So I think from that standpoint, the last thing you want is a sleeve where if you walk out and public, people are going to be throwing food at you, taking pot shots at you, trying to kill you, etc., etc., etc.
I guess it depends on the food, though.
Yeah, if people were throwing pizza at you, I'm sure you'd be fine with it. But yeah, I don't know. You don't want a notorious sleeve like Bin Laden. That would probably be a bad sleeve. Like,
bad sleeve.
It's like people just immediately shoot to kill. Like, I knew we didn't get him. I knew it was a conspiracy. Yes. No thanks. I think that would be bad. A-Rod, maybe that wouldn't be a good sleeve. I think he's a pretty well hated guy, even though. He's obviously in peak physical condition.
I wouldn't want to. How about this? Like, I wouldn't want to be re-sleeved as anybody famous. I wouldn't want that kind of attention. I wouldn't want anything like that. Anyone that has anybody that has massive amounts of eyes on them, which I do think is one of the things that the show does really well, is that reveal about the sleeve that Kovach is wearing, the Joel Kinnaman sleeve, the Riker sleeve, that it is somebody who is such a force and such a presence in the lives of so many of the characters already on the show. And I don't know, maybe it was just something that was not on my radar at all. I wasn't expecting that. Like, I didn't see that twist coming once it came in. Like, I think I started putting it together probably about two scenes before it was revealed. So I thought that the show did a great job of revealing the way that Ortega is invested in Kovach is because of the personal history that she has with his sleeve. I thought that was a cool
report. And that's great for him because Ortega is a great partner to have and seems like across the board. She's got a great family. She's a great fighter. She's a very good police officer. Like, there's a lot of
killer arm, lot of good things to say.
And so that didn't work out poorly for him, even though the target that was on Riker's back did work out poorly for him. But you saying that made me think my nightmare sleeve would be Bill O'Reilly, because I wouldn't want to see his face. He's not in good shape. Like, he's older. Yeah. Like, the people that are going to see him on the street are either going to hate him or they're going to really like him, but they're maybe not the people that you would want to be liked by. Like, it just seems like a bad scenario for me.
Yeah.
Bill O'Reilly is the one that I would think would be worst. And then maybe, what's your ideal sleeve? If you wanted to re-sleeve, like, what would your ideal be?
Oh my God. Like a pizza chef, like a great, fabulous.
You think the sleeve gives the chef abilities?
Yeah. Well, you definitely get that.
Chef Boyardee? You want to re-sleeve the Chef Boyardee?
In the show, don't you have the muscle memory of the people who this body belongs to?
You think pizza making is muscle memory?
Of course. There's definitely an aspect of that. And I know a thing or two about it conceptually. So give the concepts that I feel like I have some understanding of into the body of a practiced pizzaiolo.
Want to re-sleeve as Tony from Tony's Pizza?
I didn't say that. I don't want to specifically be
I'm trying
Tony
to think
from Tony's
of
Pizza.
Who the famous pizza sleeves would be.
I don't know, there's a few people. There's
Chuck E. Cheese, Charles Cheese, Chuck E. the Cheese.
That'd be interesting. That'd be great. Yeah. But no, I mean, the show does like kind of make you like think about that type of stuff. And I do think like just like the premise of the world is fun. Yeah. Like definitely worth like inventing a TV show around. Like I think that and I do think it's smart, especially for a show that requires such a heavy budget in order to produce everything that you're seeing in terms of just like the really, really stellar visual world that is created here on Altered Carbon. You are now like you're shaving off some expenses in terms of like you don't have to necessarily have like multi-season deals with one megastar actor. You can, you know, re-sleeve the cast moving forward. I think that that's kind of an interesting premise.
It is. And that's kind of what I was getting at, which is that they really milk the premise. I mean, you can get down, drill it down to the micro level or to the smallest possible level and say, here's how re-sleeving affects interpersonal relationships between characters, whether it's the re-sleeve as Riker Kovac showing up and Ortega's mom just wanting no part of it, right? Like saying, he's a demon, he's a monster, get him out of here. That's not Riker, you know, or whether it's somebody re-sleeving into a sleeve that ultimately presents a dilemma for someone who loves them or cares about them, or there are all those different aspects of it that play out that I think are fascinating. And I think the show does a fantastic job asking those questions and answering them, but also playing the re-sleeving not on that small level, but on the larger level, where the rich can just have a clone farm, or they can have specially designed sexualized sleeves that are designed as pleasure sleeves, or they can have bionic arm sleeves, or they can have things that are created from whole cloth, ultimately because of their largesse that make them immortal, or that make them somehow able to really truly survive any kind of risk of death, whether that's Bancroft backing himself up or whether that's Isaac Bancroft making clones of his dad and pretending to be his dad and arranging deals with foreign powers. Yeah, there are lots of things that the show answers, but it gets into the larger societal questions too, right? With the neo-Catholics and whether you can spin up murder victims and the way that re-sleeving or the ability to re-upload a stack has played out in the law and propositions that are being made about allowing religious murder victims to re-sleeve and tell who their killer was. That's a major plot point in the show ultimately. And it's it's a major reason why things happen. So I think it's fascinating that this is a show that really asks the broader questions, including even getting back to the origin of why re-sleeving was invented and who invented it. It goes like pillar to post, everything you can think about with re-sleeving. So I think that is a really fascinating part of the show for sure.
The first episode is really cool, just generally, but really cool on a rewatch. I was watching it with my father, who's a big sci-fi guy, and was kind of just looking for like a new show to get into.
Great show to watch with the parents.
Well, I wouldn't want to watch the full show with the parents, but I think the first episode was tame enough. But he seemed to enjoy it. I haven't heard if he's kept going, but watching that first episode back, it's compelling. Like they do a lot of good work in terms of setting up the world and like setting up the whole concept of like, you know, people being like morally and religiously opposed to re-sleeving and everything like that. So the show, like knowing where things wind up at the end of the first season, I'd be curious. I don't know that I like the show enough that I would do the full rewatch of the show, at least not right now, but I love that first episode enough that I was willing to do it. And certainly in the context of, you know, watching a show with my dad. But I do think that first episode plays up pretty well.
Yeah, it's no Scream Queens.
No, it's no Scream Queens, not at all. Oh my God, this really does feel like a most shows recap episode. Anyway, most pose recapped. All right, let's talk feedback questions. We got a bunch of people who had written in with some questions for us about the show. Are you ready for this?
I am. Let's do it.
Okay.
I can't imagine what kind of questions these are.
We have a couple from John DeGrief. John DeGrief had written in and said, I didn't like how they gathered everyone in the room at the end for the big reveal. Can they just stop doing that? Can't some of the less likely suspects just get a text or something? Like Joey did it.
That happened twice, right? Because he told Bancroft the lie, the fake story about right. the death to get him to buy into
Prescott
it.
Prescott was the killer. The lawyer was the killer. I'm sure that was triggering for you.
It was. Yeah, that's Cam. That's not only that, it's Cam from Bones, my mom's favorite TV show. I was really rooting for Cam from Bones, and she was just she was lower caste trying to work her way up into the Brahmin society. I really felt bad for that character.
That being said, she was also Michael's wife from Lost, and she was really nasty to Michael.
Oh, fair point. You make a fair point. Yes. And she was she's always playing a lawyer. She's a coroner on Bones. So,
okay. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah.
They did have like that big reveal both in I think it was the third to last episode.
Yeah.
This is like the performance that he has to put on for his sister. Otherwise, everyone's going to get killed. He just throws her directly under the bus and seems to have like no issue with it. I mean, look,
he doesn't care about anyone, Josh. I don't know if you
know
that.
Kovach is not a great guy. He's not a great guy. This is also from John DeGrief. Why doesn't everyone just go into the virtual for a bit and get kung fu training? That's the Matrix move, isn't it?
Yeah, there are Matrix elements with the virtual for sure. And it does unfortunately open the door to that sort of analysis. Like, why isn't more of this playing out in that realm, or why isn't this happening more? The time passage is odd to me. I have a feedback question for you, Josh. We see that Kovach was ultimately taken from his family and split from his sister by that elite tactical unit that he's recruited into, right?
The Protectorate.
The Protectorate. And when he becomes a member of the Protectorate, or SeaTac, or whatever it's called within the Protectorate, or with whatever that group is, right?
Awesome design on those soldiers, by the way. They just looked cool.
With the red eyes and the hat and the helmets. Yeah.
I feel like it's hard to like have like a really standout like sci-fi concept like that right now, because everything's like, it feels like, like you're automatically going to get like the Star Wars comparison, yes, or the Stormtrooper comparison. I thought that they did a cool job.
They did a cool job. The question I have though is, so he's taken let's say he's age like 11 or 12 or 13, right? When he's taken away. And then we also then see he gets his original sleeve is taken from him, and theoretically it's aged up. It's taken care of by the Corps or by somebody that, you know, oh, they took care of it for you. You can thank them. They aged it up for you. He's put back in that sleeve and later sent back to his home planet, right? So we are to assume that a long period of time has passed, the same period as the age of the sleeve, the difference between when he was taken and now, but we don't really know what happened in those 13 years. Is that right? Or 20 years, or however long it was?
Yeah, I think I kind of just interpreted it as, so the moment he links up with the Protectorate, for however long between he's a kid and he gets back into his adult body, he's just like becoming a super badass.
Okay.
And probably like even as a kid, like having like his little kid mind inside of like a Marine body.
I was wondering. That was ultimately my question, is how emotionally mature, leaving aside any of the horrible things that have happened to him, but what emotional age is his body, or is his stack, I should say? Like, how many years active has his stack been on the earth, not on ice, but actually like active and experiencing things in the world? Was it 20, or was it, you know, 35? Or I don't know the answer to this. It's just weird. He's taken as a kid, and the next time we see him, he's in an adult sleeve. And I know we're supposed to think some time has passed, but I'm just wondering, is he 13 years old in his brain for the majority of the show?
It's interesting. I think, you know, he lives enough years that he probably ages up. But I mean, really, that question is kind of, it's on your mind throughout much of the show. Like, the Bancrofts are 350 years old.
Right. Ray is that old as well.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And you can see, I mean, what you said ultimately earlier is one of the things that made me think of this, which is that you said as the years have gone by, she's turned into this sort of thing, or this has happened to her. Even when she turns her back on all the envoys, she is still like, she's still bad even then. But that period of time, a lot has happened to her. And we know that a lot has happened to her, but I'm not sure that we're just supposed to assume it's been 15 years. And for those 15 years, she was with the Yakuza, and she was trained in violence, and she was trained.
Right, and she was born into violence too. Like, she, you know, both she and her brother are in a horribly violent situation at home.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I do think that the show is playing with that idea a lot of like the violence leveled upon children that just kind of like follows them throughout the rest of their lives, I think is compelling and dark. So, I mean, yeah, obviously what Ray Ray does is terrible. But you can see, like, you can track, yes, you know, a lot of where that's coming from. It's all over her entire life.
Well, and so I don't mind the idea that even though Ray and Takeshi were decent, good kids in terms of looking out for each other, and maybe they thought their hearts were in the right place, what happens is while he's on ice, she is still living in the world and experiencing all these things. And when you take what they were and what they experienced and you separate her from him and you let that play out over 300 years or whatever, it's conceivable to me that this is where she would end up, versus he's been on ice, so his morals are still a little more in one place. But she was already bad when she destroyed the envoy. So I don't know. It's just fascinating to me to think about how because one of the things that first struck me about the show is when he first comes out of being taken off of ice, he's remembering a time when he was shot, and he's basically really freaking the fuck out, pardon my French, at everything that's happening in that particular moment when he's re-sleeved into Ryder or Riker. He's not ultimately like good for a little bit. Then the scientists, you've got that funny moment where it's like someone's first day and they're like watching all this play out, and then this feral animal emerges and just starts really threatening everyone in the scene, and it's like, how often does this happen? Is this, but that whole idea of him re-sleeving and his brain being screwed up is like fundamental to the thing. And yet, I don't know, for me, like the most nebulous part of this is like, but a very interesting part of it is, what does the re-sleeving, what effect does all the re-sleeving or the living all those years, what effect does that have on people's morals, values, consciousness? Like, what effect is that? Why neo-Catholics are saying we can't let people live forever? I mean, clearly other things like From Interview with the Vampire all the way on down have taken a look at what effect immortality has on livelihood and on the way that you relate to other human beings. But I think that that's a subliminal, and that's a sometimes like a very present issue in this show, and yet still one that I feel like was underserved at the end of the day.
Yeah. We've got this one from Dan Heaton, who writes in and says, why is Joel Kinnaman so weirdly ripped? He can't even hold his arms up properly because of it. Did you notice that? Was that something that you noticed, Antonio, that Joel Kinnaman is just like oddly jacked?
I mean, obviously I noticed that sleeve was jacked. Yes. And there were scars all over it. Riker has been through some shit, clearly. And I like when he starts asking about like, what happened here? Like, what's this from? Like, where did this happen? But yeah, I did not notice that he couldn't lift his arms up.
From Albert Vargas, our good buddy Albert.
A lot of dudes writing feedback about this show. I'm just going to observe that.
I know. I'm watching the first episode right now. My first question is, why would they ever give dangerous criminals physically fit sleeves? Well, sometimes I guess it's just the sleeve that's available, right? Like, that seems to be kind of a part of the protocol in this world.
Yeah, and if Albert's talking about Kovac, it was all by design, right? Like, was specifically like that was Ray's whole plan, is that she would set up Bancroft to the point where he would specifically get her brother out of storage, and that he would need to find the envoy, and that he would need to find this particular person. That was the whole point of the thing. That was why the whole thing was set up, staged, and arranged. So I agree, it doesn't make the most sense, but that was because they were tricked into making a very rich person make this request.
Not for nothing, but Albert had sent that question in about 19 hours ago as of this recording, and then 2 hours ago had a question. Is it just me, or was anyone else pumped to see Tok using Duncan MacLeod's katana in the final episode? Hashtag there can be only one.
Yeah.
I don't think it was the exact one, unless maybe it was. I'm not a big Highlander guy, but the point being that, like, you went from being on the first episode 19 hours ago to, you know, less than a full 24 hours later, you were on the finale. So
pretty good. Yeah. I mean,
a testament to the watchability of Altered Carbon, I think.
Yeah. The Highlander is also a show, right, that has dealt with these issues of immortality. And that in that particular realm, there can be only one is a thing. But here, I mean, it's not the case at all, right? So you're having to deal with a society that has casted its way into basically some people ultimately being gods, de facto. facto gods and people serving these people because they see them as gods. I think that was Mr. Leung's role in this show. We weren't sure who he was or what he was doing in the first part. And
what
we come
a
to
stash,
realize,
by the way. What a stash. Yeah. Forget the stacks. Let's talk about that stash.
Great, great crustache mustache going on there.
So yeah, good. Love that.
There's a lot. He's like, you work for her? Like, oh my God, this is really taking it sideways because that's what happened with this show. It's like, there's a whole mystery and there are ghost walkers and things that are terrifying and scaring you. And you're feeling like, oh, okay, where's this going? And it's like, oh, this is all about my sister the whole time. Sorry. Like your murder, everything. It's really about me. And it's pretty nifty, but your mileage may vary on whether that's successful.
Yeah. So no question, but since you said a lot of men writing in about the show, let's take this from Laura Maria Olson, your friend and mine, Antonio, who says, oh my God, love Altered Carbon and love that you two are back. That's all I wanted to say. And hey boys, I missed you. Woohoo.
Well, that makes me happy. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that
people
are excited to hear us talk about whatever, Josh. Yeah.
I don't know about whatever. I mean,
no, you're right. Not necessarily.
I'm sure that there is something that we could probably talk about that no one would want to hear.
Well, it sounds like good point. No, there are still people that wanted to hear that. Like, I feel like you're throwing out. This is a challenge that I don't want. This is the Bill O'Reilly sleeve of this podcast.
All right,
we are
editing this out of the podcast. Yeah, definitely not going to be in the final version. All right, last one. And this is less a question and more a story. This is pretty cool. Trevor Roberts, who is a listener of the podcast and is an RHAP patron, was actually on Altered Carbon, appears on show. Do you remember in episode 5, in the beginning of episode 5, this is after we have figured out that Takeshi is wearing a sleeve that is of great importance to Ortega. And in the beginning of episode 5, it's not we're not seeing Joel Kinnaman as Takeshi. We're seeing Joel Kinnaman as Riker, and he is interrogating a guy and beating the crap out of a guy. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
That was Trevor Roberts. Trevor Roberts was getting his butt handed to him by Joel Kinnaman.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And so he shared a good story about that. Did he
say anything about Joel Kinnaman's arms?
No, he said Joel Kinnaman is a lovely gentleman, but oi, did I have to have a massage or two after filming my torture scene for 9 hours? The dude gets into it. He said that, tons of quote unquote acting going on in that scene.
Oh my gosh. He really beat the shit out of him.
Yeah. He said, he needed to go to acupuncture 3 times after having a gun jammed against my jaw for 9 hours while Joel would hold the back of my neck like he was going to snap it. So really getting into the role, both Trevor and Joel. So great job. Great job on your part, Trevor. Anyone who didn't know that, you can go and you can rewatch that scene knowing that is one of us.
That's pretty dope. Congratulations, yeah. Trevor. I very much remember that scene, so that's really cool.
Yeah, it was a great scene. Trevor also said that Altered Carbon was unique in using buildings like Vancouver's old post office and a separate building 20 minutes out of the city to build the sprawling street sets with the indoor rain towers. It was really something to behold. They started casting the project in the fall of 2016. Went to camera around December 2016 or January 2017, so the entire cast and crew had to wait nearly a year for all the visual effects to be completed.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, like I have issues with the plot. I have some issues with the story for sure, but just in terms of like the expansiveness of the show, like they really did not spare any expense. It's pretty clear on that front. Ben Martell had written in and said, what's your views on the visuals and immersiveness of the setting? Did it do the job for you? And my answer to that would be 1,000,000% yes.
Yeah, I really like, so let's talk about, let me just ask a couple quick hitters for you, because
for sure.
I'm things that I'm trying to resolve in my own head. I already asked you about the age issue. When Kinnaman buys all the drugs in the backpack and he's really just going to get lit, and maybe he's going to decide to go back in on ice. He's not going to take the case. And he takes all the drugs and he's stumbling around the streets, experiencing all the drugs. And that's a very memorable visual sequence. The Ortega puts on a broadcast blocker is what she says. But while he's taking the drugs, he's seeing all these things. One of the things he sees is the ad for the Raven, and that's how he ends up there. But are we to assume that without that broadcast blocker, that that's what life is like for people in that world? They're constantly seeing these ads, or was that because of the drugs?
So I spoke with the visual effects supervisor of this show for THR, for the Hollywood Reporter, and we talked a little bit about like the ocular implants. He has a name for them, which I'm forgetting off the top of my head. But one of the things that they really tried to get across was that there are, you know, these are basically like the iPhones of the future, where you get like these ocular implants, and that's how you're able to like see basically like your heads up display that you get with Kovach in that scene, or Ortega has one that's a little bit more militarized, or some of the wealthier people, the Meths, like the Bancrofts, they have like much like sleeker outputs and everything like that. And so the one that Kovach has is like a real like bootleg phone, basically. Like it's a really, really crappy phone. And so he has none of like the ad blockers on the phone that he has installed into his eye. And he has no idea what this thing even is, because he's waking up into a world that's very foreign to him in so many ways. So I don't think that that's the experience that everybody has. I think that's the experience that you have if you don't have ad blockers on your iPhone, literally your iPhone.
So in other words, most of the people that are probably too poor to afford it do have that experience.
They can, or I think the thing is like, you can block those ads if you know how to navigate the phone, but it's probably just like anything where like you're still going to get a pop-up and it's going to be super annoying. Yeah. So that's the world. That's the world that they're living in.
I mean, that seems pretty miserable, right?
Yes,
and that seems
deeply,
like an interesting thing to think about, like that there are people walking around who are just getting that shouted at them from every chamber. But I don't know. I thought that was interesting. A broadcast blocker. Here, I put it on you. That's it. Like, you don't have to watch that stuff now. And so it made me wonder, like, well, who's watching that stuff? And the reason I asked that is he did see the ad for the hotel, but no one had stayed in the hotel for 50 years, right? So.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it's because they fell out of fashion, which was partially suggested,
yeah,
or
I think
it's
that's
because
the suggestion is that like the quality of these hotels, of the virtual hotels, is like they get obsessed with you. They don't they say something like it's like
he calls him a stalker.
Yeah.
At one point Elliot calls Poe a stalker. Yeah.
Right. So and in talking with Chris Connor, who plays Poe, he was talking about how his character like has like a different outlook on humans, where like it's kind of like, you know, an abusive relationship with a parent. Like you keep coming back, even if it's, you know, not a great thing, but he's like still infatuated with humanity. While you see that scene, I think it's in episode 2, where Poe visits a few other AI people, a few other
the poker game.
Yeah, indeed.
I finally got a guest.
There you go. And
I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, that was great. And like all those people are kind of like giving him grief about his continued infatuation with humanity. So I think that like it's pretty clear that like these types of hotels have just they've fallen out of favor completely.
Well, and so that brings me to another question, which is, do you have any other favorite scenes from the series that we haven't talked about? Because one of mine is certainly when Kinnaman, when Riker, when Kovach is first checking into the hotel and he has not yet approved payment and his life is on the line. And Poe is basically like, just go ahead and put your thumb here, like sign up. And then as soon as he does, the guns come out of the ceiling and you see what the hotel is willing to do to go to protect those guests. I thought that was great.
Yeah, spectacular.
I loved that scene.
Yeah.
Do you have any other favorite scenes that we haven't mentioned?
Other favorite scenes that we haven't mentioned. Well, I love the Poe death scene. I think we talked about that.
Yeah.
The scene in the elevator, when Mr. Lung shows up and is trying to assassinate Ortega and instead kills her partner. That was really harrowing. Like that was just a really intense scene.
R.I.P. Samir.
Yeah, that was tough. That was really difficult. Real death for sure. You don't want to get RD'd and he does. So that was an intense scene. Another one that I really liked was sort of like the look at me, I'm a martyr scene when Bancroft goes to the sick people, and like exposure to them is like immediately going to like
kill him.
Yeah, but like he has all of these other sleeves, so it's like really not a big deal. And it's really him like kind of doing that whole like me as a savior type of imagery. Like I thought that was a really interesting character note, and I liked that scene. And I think having someone like Kovach, who's so skeptical and really kind of loathes his employer in that moment, I thought was really cool.
Yeah, it's weird to me that you can, that you have to be super rich to back yourself up. Like, that's the part where, like, so you're telling me a law enforcement officer whose life is going to be on the line pretty much all the time does not have a backup? Like, I understand that the stat got blown out, but, like, where, why no backup for a law, for a Leo? Like, that, that's the sort of thing that I'm just, I didn't ask myself questions like that too much throughout the show.
It makes sense to me, honestly. I mean, I think that really one of the big themes of the show is like this technology really only, like, rather than making the future a better place, it just increases the disparity between the people who live in the clouds, literally in the in the case of this show, and the people who live on the streets. You know, these people, the meths that they're called, the really ancient ones who are like phenomenally wealthy, are going to be clinging on to that life for dear life, and at the expense of you know, better uses for this technology. So I think that it's sadly realistic.
I agree with that. It just seems like data backup is not something that is easily monetized to that degree. But maybe I'm crazy about that. But the overall theme, I'm all on board with.
Yeah.
You know me, like, I'm a class warrior. Like, I'm all on board with that. That being a theme that they were willing to explore and wanted to explore, that was a major hook for me in the show. I just was confused why data backup itself was such a problem.
Did you like it? It was so expensive. Did you like the fight drum scene? Like, were you in or out on fight drum?
Pretty out. Yeah, pretty out. Yeah. And that there's a lot of that I didn't like. You're talking, the fight drum is the, I don't remember the actor's name, or I'm not sure if I ever knew it, but the really highly stylized.
Yeah, Matt Frewer, a.k.a. Yeah. Max Headroom.
Yeah, that's Max Headroom. See, that's the thing is, I knew that was somebody, but I wasn't putting together exactly who it was. That didn't fit to me. It was a little bit more of an outlier. Even though as I said, I really loved when Ray entered into the realm and just destroyed everyone in sight. That was a great payoff to how that all played out. I didn't like the way that was all. I was like, what is this now? He's dressed like a character from the Hunger Games. Like, this just doesn't fit to me with a lot of what we're seeing otherwise. And I don't know, that element was a little much. I did feel like the show borrowed a lot from a lot of different sources, stylistically, as well as narratively. There are a lot of Avatar overtones with the home tree or the home base, or there are a lot of that with the envoys that were being built up. So I did feel like there were connections to other things that I like, that I felt were rewarding. I thought I liked them, but on the whole, I'm not sure. I didn't like the fight drum connection too much, even though I'm sure it connects to other things. It just, that was one that didn't work for me.
What else do you got? Anything? Have we talked it through?
I feel like we
altered our carbon sufficiently.
I paid passing tribute to this, but I loved the Day of the Dead and the Abuela Reese leaving as that criminal sleeve. I thought that actor, whatever his name was, did a fantastic job, which is not an easy task to pull off. You're playing, and I think shout out to all these actors who are playing one character or one version of a character in another sleeve of the character, and I think that's asking a lot. What's the name of that? What's the name of the Wachowski movie where Tom Hanks is
Cloud Atlas?
Cloud Atlas. Yes. I felt like there was some Cloud Atlas overtones to the connectivity of these characters sometimes. Very different things for sure, but I felt like that was another show or another movie or another piece of something where I felt like there's interesting stuff going on here with the performances being connected, and so I really like that performance from that actor playing a different role completely, but one that I thought there's a lot of fun with. I don't know. I felt it was a little, I didn't feel like I, that was a really good story that was going on with the Elliots. And I almost immediately accepted, oh, okay. So this male actor, who is really playing Ava is doing a great job. Like, I'm immediately feeling sympathy and I'm ignoring like the fact that it's changed completely from what the expectation would be. And I'm really seeing them as a familial unit. And then we just had Kinnaman explain in voiceover, like, Ava got her old sleeve back. And it's like, right. Oh, I didn't feel like that was a satisfying conclusion to what I thought was a really interesting situation that was introduced.
That was interesting that Lizzie decided to like keep her synthetic body.
She kept the synth, right? Yeah. She's a skin job now. So it is what it is.
Yeah, she becomes really important towards the end of the season. Like, she does like the full like the full Neo Trinity, like take down the head in the clouds thing where she gets like beamed aboard the head in the clouds and she just like rips the whole place up. That was pretty wild.
Yeah. And I thought a decent payoff to what we had experienced with her, like a good way to bring her back into that story, considering where she had worked and what had happened with her and then what Poe had done to rehabilitate her in a way. Even though it was not really to her parents' full approval, this is what ultimately played out. And so I thought that that was actually pretty good. I thought that actress did a good job with what she was given. And I thought those scenes were interesting and they actually connected to the overall story in a way that I was satisfied with.
Did you like Russian Hilo?
That was a little weird. That was a
Ammo
little weird.
Ammo Pennicott playing the first of the two Dimitris.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
We didn't talk about the torture scene at all. Like, that was, talk about the violence. Oh my God.
Yeah, that was too much.
That was too difficult.
Yeah, there were multiple scenes actually where I felt like, okay, this is enough. Like, you're going
like
a little too
Joel
far.
Seeing Joel Kinnaman with like his legs sawed off and then cauterized and then like some sort of like alien snake being implanted in his body and then being burned alive. Like, that was just like, ugh.
Yeah.
My, I mean, and that you, God.
I appreciate that you wanted to get an idea of what could happen in the virtual world, right? Because you wanted to have some concept of the things that people do in terms of the lack of humanity that's displayed. Once you not only can take away real death, but once you also can torture people virtually or put people in the virtual world, the idea of what is sacrificed humanity wise. I thought that they did a pretty good job of showing that with that brutality. That said, it went too far. And I was also very confused with the twin stuff. I was just like, okay, now I know you're sleeving these people differently and you've got DME1 and DME2, but this is a little too much. I do like it though. And you said ultimately, you made a reference. I do like it when you've got what I would say is a Canadian show. No other way to put it. A show that's filmed in Canada. You see some actors that you've seen in other things that you haven't really seen much of since then, and you see them play out in another show. So I like Canadian shows because I like seeing some of these Canadian actors over and over again.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's cool, and I it's just, I don't know.
Because Dollhouse was Canadian too, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
It feels right to me.
Because wasn't
know.
Hilo also in Dollhouse? Like, there's that connection.
100%, yeah, of course.
So there are those connections to some of these Canadian actors. I do like seeing that. I like seeing some of these people that you see on genre shows in other genre shows. That's always a benefit for sure.
I hope that their rendition of San Francisco was
Bay City.
Yeah, Bay City. I hope that that was love you, Bay City. I hope that that was satisfying to the San Franciscans that are out there. That the Canadian San Francisco is better than Canadian.
Well,
New
I mean,
York.
People live on the Golden Gate Bridge, so there's that.
Sure.
Or was that the Bay Bridge? I don't know, but yeah, people live on bridges now because I guess flying cars exist, so you don't need bridges anymore.
I would like a flying car.
Yeah, well, we were supposed to have them by now. We were promised flying cars, and they didn't arrive yet. So whatever,
it'd be nice.
We could
be
pretty
nice.
Bummed out. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm not bummed out because we got to talk about a TV show together on a podcast, Antonio, and that's always a good time.
Hey, we did it. What are we watching next? Are we watching something next?
No, nothing planned. Still nothing planned.
All right. Well, let me know what the Hollywood Reporter wants you to write about for work, and then I guess I'll watch it.
Cool. Sounds great. It's a great deal for me.
I'm sure it is. Yeah, I've got to figure out some way to get this repaid. I got to figure out the return on this investment. But no,
let me know.
It's
Give
a
me
great
your
deal
ideas.
For
Pitch me your ideas. I'm
great deal for me too, Josh.
I'm open. I'm open hearted. I'm up for anything.
Okay. Well, I heard Top Chef's going to be in Kentucky, so you know if they're looking for any judges,
yeah,
hook me up.
That'd be fun. That'd be great.
And then we could podcast about it.
You were on the Top Chef podcast recently.
I was.
How did that go? How was that?
Very well. I really very much enjoyed my return. You can check that out at Reality TV Rehapups. Search for the Top Chef podcast. I appeared on that. I think Mike Bloom and Haley Strong, along with Kurt Clark, who has some scheduling conflicts for the rest of this season, but I think they did a great job carrying that podcast through. I really enjoyed as a listener listening and laughing along with the stuff they were laughing at throughout the course of this season of Top Chef, which is winding up. But Josh, my work is nothing. That's no offense to those people because I love them, but you, my friend, have been delivering a podcast of your own making, and that is probably wrapping up here pretty soon too.
The first one out is coming.
The second first one out.
Ghost Zero is getting close to a conclusion. It will conclude the day after the Survivor Ghost Island premiere. Very excited about all of that. Taryn Armstrong doing a killer job on the edit. As of this recording, 4 more episodes to release on First One Out. So the final half of the season will be coming at you fast and furious, kind of like Will Yun Lee, who plays Takashi Kovacs as his original body. He was Han in the Fast and Furious.
Yeah, because we only have like 2 weeks left.
Yeah, there's only 2 weeks
left. Until the Survivor premiere. So here we are.
Be very intense. It's going to be great. That's over at robhasawebsite.com/iTunes to subscribe to all of that stuff. It's also embedded in my THR coverage of the Survivor preseason. Lots going on here on the post-show recaps as well. Game of Thrones rewatch is still proceeding. We are taking a break this week, so we are going to be getting into Season 3 premiere territory. That should be coming your way February 21st. Look out for that. Very excited about that. And then, yeah, Antonio, we got to figure out what we're doing. We'll come up with a plan. We'll let you guys know.
If you have any suggestions, you can always let us know. What is it? Postshowrecaps.com/feedback?
That's the one. That's the feedback form. Right, we're also on the Twitter bots. Antonio is at AC Mazzaro. How many Z's? How many R's?
2 Z's, 1 R, unlike Isaac from this show.
I am at Round Howard, and you can find me on the Twitter bots there as well. Thank you guys for listening. Super fun talking to you, Antonio. Let us know if you guys check out Altered Carbon and what you think of it. Would be very curious. What are you watching right now, Antonio? Anything fun? Anything good?
For the first time ever, watching Narcos and loving it.
Ooh, cool. Yeah.
My New Year's resolution was to learn Spanish, and I took 4 years of Latin. I know some Italian, so Spanish is a pretty natural transition. I've been studying it every day since the new year. I've done a really good job.
How do you say grandma in Spanish?
Well, you already said, we said abuela, like abuela. It's there. Like, yeah, we know that. So,
adios, abuela.
But I'm really enjoying picking up Narcos for that reason, because a lot of it is in the Spanish, and I can listen to it and play that out. And of course, anyone who speaks Spanish is just like Pablo Escobar, which is obviously not true. My point being, I do not equate this to anyone's experience, but I'm just saying the fact that it's in Spanish means that it's an enjoyable experience for me, even more so than it would be if it weren't, or if I wasn't working on Spanish. But the fact that I am means that I'm really enjoying the show.
I'm watching a foreign language Netflix show as well. I watched the first episode of Dark.
Yep, I got to get on that. Dark.
The Dark. It's dark. Dark. It's dark. I only watched the first episode so far, so please nobody spoil me.
And you watched it in Deutsch.
I watched it in the dark. Yeah, I watched
it.
You were
a Deutsch bag.
Yeah, it's a German language show. Watched it with the subtitles. The default is overdubbed.
Yeah,
which is that's not great. I'm not a fan. Not a fan of that.
Believe what the Spanish speakers might say. No bueno.
No bueno. Indeed. Oh, you're learning. You're doing so well, Antonio.
See, I know. Look at that. Yeah, 48% fluent, baby.
Yeah, I don't expect there to be a dark podcast, but I don't know if you watch it, Antonio, and if you really like it, and if I really
just
like
depends
it
on
the
if the Hollywood Reporter wants you to write about it, Josh.
No, we're too late. This would just be for funsies. This would just be for
okay. Well, it's been on my list. A lot of people did tweet at us and tell us to watch that show. The Lord Lost came up a lot with that show. Stranger Things came up a lot with that show. So it's certainly on my radar. I'll get to it. Maybe when I'm learning German.
Sounds like a plan. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. Really fun to talk to you, Antonio. Really fun to talk about Altered Carbon. And we will talk to you all again sometime in the future. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.